Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League. I'm Robbie Musto. He's not Robbie Earle, but special guest host Stephen Warnock joins me at the desk today. So here are today's topics. Sunday's highly entertaining title clash between Liverpool and Manchester City ends in a 1-1 draw that now leaves the title race wide open from now through the end of the season. Kai Havertz plays hero for Arsenal by scoring a late winner against Brentford to go top of the table over Liverpool on goal difference. Tottenham blitz Aston Villa with 4 second-half goals to win 4-0 and squeeze the gap between them to 2 points in the title race. And Manchester United score 2 first-half penalties against Everton to keep their noses in the race for a Champions League spot. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode. All right, Stephen. Thank you so much, mate, for popping in and joining me in the Two Robbies pod.
Yeah.
We've had a brilliant weekend of football, of course, highlighted by the last game that we've just watched at Anfield. Ended Liverpool 1, Manchester City 1, McAllister with the penalty in the second half, John Stones with a clever work free, corner kick in the first half, finishes 1-1. It's difficult to know where to start. I guess, why don't we start with kind of the result and what both managers feel like after that game, given what we saw in the match?
I think Guardiola will be quite satisfied with the result after the game, having listened to his interview, the way he spoke after the game, how he said they were in control for 15 minutes, the first 15 minutes, and then he said, then Liverpool just, they smother you, they make it difficult, they make you play under stress, and he knows how difficult it is to play at Anfield. I think Jurgen Klopp will be disappointed after the game. I think he'll be happy that they got a result, as in they didn't get beat.
Yeah.
But with given the opportunities, I thought they could have pinched it.
Yeah, I think when you look at the chances second half, and we showed a lot of them on our show, Luis Diaz had a game that, like, he was brilliant in so many instances.
Yeah.
But when the final piece, the finishing was poor, particularly in the first half when he went through. Was that first half, second half? He went through one-on-one.
Yeah, second half.
Second half, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And he shanked his shot a little bit given that opportunity. I mean, that's what I think. I think, you know, going into the game, I remember saying, this is such an opportunity for Liverpool. Such an opportunity, given the title race, given that somebody's got to beat Man City at some point to knock them off the top. And this was going to be the toughest game for Man City. But given that, all the injuries that Liverpool had coming into it, I kind of thought, you know what, with all those players and City kind of playing well, only Jack Grealish is out from fitness levels from them. The Anfield factor, and we love the atmosphere today, Stephen.
Yeah.
Was that the difference between an understrength Liverpool side that managed to probably deserve to win against City?
Yeah, I think so. Because I think if you reverse that fixture and put that team out at the Etihad, I think they struggle. I think the fans can do so much for you. They can help you in so many ways, in how you close down, the reception you get from winning the ball back. It gives you that extra few yards. It gives you that extra little burst of pace in your legs. I worried before the game when I saw the team, purely for the fact no Salah, three youngsters.
What about the Robinson decision? I mean, he played against Sparta Prague, didn't he, in the Europa?
Yeah.
I think he played a whole game, and he was left out of this one. What are you, as a former fullback, what was all that about?
I found it interesting. I mean, he said it was just that he couldn't play back-to-back games, and you're thinking, well, wouldn't you want one of your senior players to play in this game? So why not play him against Sparta Prague midweek and have him ready for this game?
Do you think he thinks Joe Gomez is a better defender? Like, just an out-and-out better defender?
Quite possibly, and I think that might have been one of the reasons for it. Also, as well, I don't think Andrew Robertson's hit top form. I don't think he's in that form that we've seen from the last 4 or 5 years from him. And whether that injury has just caught up with him a little bit, and he's finding it difficult to get fit, because he's been out a while. with the shoulder injury, and it's not an easy one to come back from. So that was another big decision, or was it a tactical one, and he's tried to mask it a little bit by saying he can't play back-to-back games because you've got Phil Foden, who likes to come inside, and if he's coming inside on Joe Gomez's strongest foot to defend him,
Yeah, good point. Yeah, maybe, quite possibly. Just in terms of specifics from Liverpool, and I think maybe before we get into that, like, just Man City's style, where they want it slower and more steady and more controlled. Is there another team that do it as well as Liverpool in terms of stopping that? I mean, we've seen different ways of playing against Man City where a lot of teams drop off and play on a counter-attack, and sometimes they get results doing that. We sometimes see teams high-press Man City, but not for the duration of the 90 minutes. Liverpool seem to find a way, particularly at Anfield, to do that. Is that the only way, really, that you can get on top of Man City? You can make them sweat, you can make them hurried. You know, that's probably a good word for what Liverpool did to them. They made them hurried.
Yeah.
By the tremendous energy. Where did it all come from Liverpool? Who were the key men in that energy part of it?
Well, I think Diaz and Nunes are huge in that department, but I look at Szoboszlai and McAllister and Endo. They're the ones who have to set the press, but I think that shout comes from behind, from Van Dijk, when to go. Because what he doesn't want to do is he doesn't want to leave himself exposed. He doesn't want City to get through that press and then turn and being able to thread balls through. If you get De Bruyne in space.
He did it a few times first half, didn't he?
They did. Got a little bit. And that's going to happen. But that's where Jurgen Klopp said before the game, you've got to be brave. And I think the bravery is continuing to go. It sounds daft, but often you can probably go. You're a former midfielder. And if you go a few times and you don't quite get there, you lose.
Automatically drop off.
Yeah. And I think that's where City prey on that in a lot of games against the middle of the road teams, if you like, and not the top end teams. Whereas the belief in Liverpool is we're a fraction out. Once we get that fraction right, then they're going to struggle to get out. And I think that's the big thing for me is the way that they do that against City. It's so brave, though, isn't it, to be able to do that time and time again.
And also, it takes a tremendous amount of energy.
Oh.
Energy. Like, we had Virgil van Dijk on the set afterwards down at the pitch side with the guys, and I think he said at the start of it, it's just exhausting. Like, I'm tired. Like, it's really, really hard. Like, you know, we're laughing because we love the game. It was a great game. Like, so many reasons why it was a great game for us to work on it and to watch it. But from his point of view, and players in there for Liverpool, they've got to work their socks off. They literally do to try and stop City, because if you don't, then their football gets going.
Which team would you rather play in from a midfielder's point of view?
I'd rather play in Man City. I would.
Would you?
And maybe you surprise. You know what? Probably what team would I better fitted probably would have been Liverpool, because the energy that I can in terms of helping the team style, probably Liverpool more than the more technical requirements of Man City. But if I was that kind of quality, I'd rather play in a City side that mostly have the ball, because 99% of the time, that possession, that quality, the plan from your manager, it's enjoyable, Stephen, isn't it? It's just enjoyable to have the ball, to knock it around. That wasn't enjoyable today, and that's why we loved it.
Yeah.
And that's why we loved it, because Liverpool, like no other, can ruffle their feathers.
No, there's only them and Arsenal, isn't there, really? I know Villa did a number on Manchester City at Villa Park with that overload of midfield, and Man City didn't even have one shot on goal, did they?
Right.
Which was incredible.
Yeah.
There's not many teams in world football can do that to Manchester City,
and make them look like knackered at the end of it, like ragged. And City look ragged and tired and exhausted at the end of it.
The great thing is, which I cannot wait for, is we get to watch a very similar thing all over again in a couple of weeks with Arsenal and Man City, or Manchester City and Arsenal. Yeah. That's going to be phenomenal,
These games are so big, aren't they, with the title now.
Yeah.
Just before you... Just a few individuals, like... I mean, I know I looked at the right side, I'm thinking Conor Bradley's 20, Harvey Elliott is 20.
Yeah.
Like, any individuals that stood out for you given the context of this game?
Well, I think Kwanzaa. I mean, no
he's
one...
21. He's 21.
Yeah, no one mentioned him before the game, as in Konate's missing. I mean, Konate and Van Dijk's relationship this season, everyone's talking about Van Dijk back to his world best, but he's his world's best because of his partner, and that makes him a better player. But Van Dijk, even alongside Kwanzaa, and Kwanzaa is just grown into a brilliant footballer who is trusted alongside Van Dijk, excellent on the ball with his passing. And you're playing against Haaland, and you think Haaland are going to stand on him.
I know.
Not a kick.
It's a great point, by the way. I mean, even during and after, and maybe we're guilty of that, not a lot of talk about Jarrod Kwanzaa.
No.
Well, a lot of talk about Erling Haaland. Didn't get a kick in the game. And as you said, there was a couple of moments where Van Dijk had to stand out, the one-on-one defending, etc. with Haaland. But Kwanzaa, and I remember Jurgen Klopp, there was a reporter asking questions about how proud he is of the young players, and he mentioned Conor Bradley and maybe Elliot and a couple of others. And Klopp said, well, what about Kwanzaa? Nobody talks about Kwanzaa. Yeah. And I think he is sneaky, blooming good.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not going to do underappreciated this weekend, but he would be absolutely in there for a shout, from you then.
Absolutely. In
terms of what he's done at Liverpool as 21-year-age player. And when you think about going forward with Liverpool now, and if Jurgen Klopp's going to leave the team, there's plenty of young players that should give encouragement to the fans and any new manager coming in.
Yeah, my big thing with this is, and you'll know this being a former player as well, is opinions in football. So a new manager comes in, and he might not have that same opinion on certain players.
Mm.
Now, there's certain players who excel under certain managers because they see a quality that another manager might not see. And sometimes people, and I've done it in the past myself, where I've moved from clubs thinking I want a new challenge, but really I should be staying at that club because that manager fits me and he believes in me, he trusts me. And I think that's the concern with a new manager coming in. I know where people will go, yeah, but they're good enough, they'll play. It's not always the way.
Not always the case, and they might not see so much action.
Yeah, that's it. Not concern, but it's just where does it lie and how does it hang? However, it won't just be the young players. It'll be senior players as well, and that's the fascinating part about the new manager coming.
We're going to find out, yeah. Mm. Just switching to Man City a little bit. Am I a little bit harsh in being a bit disappointed with Kevin De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva, Julian Alvarez?
Mm.
I expected a little bit more kind of determination to play through the press sometimes. I think the first half, it was kind of even. Sometimes they played through, sometimes they didn't. They kind of drifted out of the game a little bit second half, some of these players. Is that back down to the physicality intensity of Liverpool taking their game away or an off day? Anything about City that disappointed you in terms of their performers?
I think the big thing for me is when I watch City and you've got Liverpool's press on them, the ball's into midfield are sometimes up and in and around the neck, and the hurry passes into them. So not real quality that we're used to seeing week in, week out, because more often than not, City find a way to play out. So there's a pattern to beat that press.
Mm.
But they haven't come up against the press like this before, and it's so difficult to play out.
Mm.
So De Bruyne and Silva, they found it difficult to find spaces to get that out ball to them once Liverpool had nullified it after the sort of the first 15, 20 minutes or so.
Mm.
That's the big thing. However, I've been at Anfield before and I've watched the likes of Luis Suarez, Messi, Busquets. I mean, these are world-class players struggle in a game against Liverpool at Anfield because of the intensity, because of the pressure, because of the fan base. And am I surprised? No, because I know what it's like at Anfield and how difficult it is to play there.
Mm. It was a brilliant game of football. As we kind of reflect on it with the title race, and I guess we'll maybe talk a little bit more when we get to Arsenal in a second. Did any of these teams disappoint in terms of the title race? Did they? I still feel that's a lost opportunity for Liverpool, given the chances they had, given the atmosphere that was there and the Klopp factor and everything else. Was that game significant in any way? I mean, obviously the table says it's really, really tight now. Anything significant from the game going forward for the title race? From both teams?
From Liverpool's point of view, that they've just gone toe-to-toe with the European champions, arguably the best team in the world, with not their best team.
No one near, yeah.
I think five players would get in their first team. Sorry, excuse me.
Yeah, five players.
Yeah.
The starters of Liverpool weren't there.
Yeah, and that, however, not every game is going to be with that atmosphere at Anfield.
I know.
Because it's not going to be Manchester City coming to Anfield every week. So that's a big ask of the fans to recreate that every week. But that's what they've got to do at Anfield. So that's going to be a big ask. They've got some difficult games. From City's point of view, I just don't think they could afford to lose this game. And I think even walking away with a draw, I think Pep would have bit your hand off before the game because he knows how tough it is to go to Anfield.
Mm.
Even with the team Liverpool had, he still knows it's a difficult place to go.
Mm.
But on the flip side of things, Arsenal's result yesterday, under massive pressure to put pressure on these two teams before this game, I thought that performance yesterday was solid, because we've seen Arsenal blow teams away of late, but being able to dig a result out, I thought that was impressive. Mm. That was a big thing.
No, to us. And just before we move on, I think Liverpool will want, you know, the Mo Salah's back and Konate's and Trent Alexander-Arnold's and Robertson's back.
So where do you see it?
Well, I think for Liverpool to win the title, like we saw at the Forest last weekend, and this game really, really tight, to stretch every sinew, if you like, to get these results, I just think they need some of those guys back in, find their match rhythm again, to really kick on. They're in a really good spot. They're equal top. There's 64 points with them and Arsenal. We'll get onto in a second. So I just think it's an amazing title race. Nobody can really know with any kind of authority what's going to happen here.
No chance.
You know, we all know that City aren't going anywhere.
Yeah.
They've got very few injuries. They've done it so many times. But just amazing game, wasn't it?
It's brilliant.
It was a blimmin' amazing game.
Brilliant, it was.
And,
I couldn't sit down all the way through it.
Yeah, you're jumping around like a crazy guy.
Because you just know the quality that's on show, but there's always that, even though Liverpool were dominating the game, in the back of my mind I'm thinking, it only takes one opportunity.
I know.
And Foden had that little one where he could have dinked Kelleher. Kelleher does amazing.
Yeah.
And then Doku hits Docker's the post.
Yeah, goes straight back in his arms, yeah.
Oh, my heart was in my mouth.
It's amazing. Yeah, amazing, brilliant. Amazing. The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all on its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric never could be. It was built with a driver in mind, just like Acura's been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience the electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
So the other team, of course, is in this, is Arsenal.
Mm.
And blimey, Arsenal. Kai Havertz scores a winning goal very late into the game. Declan Rice put them 1-0 up, wasn't it? And Johan Wisser scores. It was 2-1. Ended up 2-1 with Arsenal with that winning goal from Mikel Arteta. God, so many goals, so many stories. What did you make of this one?
I thought before Ramsdale made the mistake, I thought Arsenal looked very, very comfortable. And that rocked them. That mistake going into half time, just before half time, it changed the way Thomas Frank approached the second half. I think he just went, right, okay, brilliant, we can shut up shop, we can make life difficult. And they nearly did it. I know there was talk about Kai Havertz, should he be sent off? I think it was subjective. I think it was a really difficult call for the referee. Mm. If it goes to VAR, he can't overturn it. He can't give a yellow card
for
a dive.
But we should,
But it was a big moment in the game. And credit to Kai Havertz. We spoke about it on the show yesterday. Some aren't convinced by him. Some like him. Some find him... I think, sort of... He hasn't quite hit what we're all expecting him to hit. The potential's there, but we still expect more. However, he scored some big, important goals.
Oh, it's 8 Premier League goals now.
Yeah.
It's winning... Well, it's certainly the winning goal against Brentford twice this season.
Yeah.
Maybe I think you make a good point there, where it's like maybe not he's not hitting the performance level that we might expect. $83 million. Arteta thought he can get more out of him than we saw from him at Chelsea. But to be fair, that decision to play him, because Jesus is fit now, was a big one. Mm. To sign him in the first place was a big one.
Yeah.
To play Jorginho as a holding midfield player to allow Declan Rice to get forward is a big decision.
Yeah.
That's a big decision.
I'd agree.
Because Declan Rice is such a really good holding midfield player that protects so well. But to have him in the problem area. The left side of that three in midfield has been the problem area since Granit Xhaka left.
Yeah.
And Havertz, we spoke to Mikel Arteta, Stephen, right at the start of the season, and I asked him flat out on a Zoom call, you know, where's he going to play? And he saw him as a direct replacement for Granit Xhaka.
Wow.
The left side of the midfield. He played him there many times. Didn't do great. Brought him out the side.
Yeah.
Tried him again. Tried him in different spots. Tried him as a higher forward. And now he's popped him up front. And not just the goals, the sneaky tallies creeping up now to 8 Premier League goals, but the way he plays, the aggressive nature of him. He's a big guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the work ethic. And he's a durable guy. Always available. Always fit. He runs up and down. Love all that.
Mm.
But the goals. You got to have goals from this guy. And he's starting to score the goals. So the two decisions, Kai Havertz scores a winning goal. And Declan Rice with a header from across from Ben White. Crossed both balls in, didn't he?
Yeah.
That's all down to Mikel Arteta.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question on some... It sort of ties into this. When Arsenal hit that blip, and they weren't doing well, and everyone spoke about this. They need a number nine. Were you in that camp?
Yeah, I was.
Were you?
Yeah.
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 And I think that's great management, isn't it, as well, from Arteta to be able to spin that a little bit?
I was in the camp because at the time, Martinelli had two or three.
Mm.
Saka had gone through a little bit of a bad patch. We'd got five. Odegaard got a few. Rice might have had a couple. And I'm like, you know, who's going to get the rest of these goals?
You felt that they needed something else at plan B.
And it still might, by the way. I felt like not having a bona fide proper number nine to get your regular 15 or whatever might be a problem.
So the one of the things I'll ask you about that is, so having watched Manchester City away at Liverpool today with Haaland through the middle, effectively Manchester City almost play with 10 men because he doesn't give you much off the ball in terms of closing down. The link-up play is not really there. Does it suit Arsenal better and Man City because of the style of play to have that false nine? Because then they can overload the midfield and get more numbers in there and dominate the game?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
And Havertz drops in.
Yeah.
We talked about that. It drops in to make a little diamond in there to try and, you know, get the extra man in midfield. But you potentially lose. Haaland doesn't do that so much, does he? Haaland doesn't drop in.
No.
He's not that real kind of really clever feet sort of guy. He's obviously the guy that gets a lot of goals and scores winning goals and gets in behind a lot. So the Kai Havertz thing is really interesting. The other thing that has really come on since I was talking about this is set pieces.
Oh, it's incredible.
Is it 19 or something?
Yeah.
The last time I checked. And Man City's goals from set pieces was 11. So that's an extra 8 goals compared to Man City production to keep them in and around the numbers of goals required, because these set pieces are in different games, to be to where they need to be. And then the Sheffield United performance 6-0, that was so great for the goal difference, racking up the goals there to give them almost like an extra point, given that the goal difference now is really, really strong. So, I went. I and by the way, it might still. Yeah, we don't know who's going to win the title.
No.
But if Arsenal do it by, you know, this is Arteta's first job as a manager, by the
phenomenal.
Way,
phenomenal.
You know, it's some turnaround from Unai Emery and back, you know, and Arsene Wenger. The job that Edu and Arteta's done has been remarkable. And even in the face of that, if they can find, I think I made a note, it's here somewhere, but I think I remember it. 7 players of Arsenal have scored 5 Premier League goals or more. Mm. 7. Then you throw on the set piece element to that as well.
Yeah.
That's talking about spreading the goals around.
Yeah.
And I think my point a few months ago was, well, this it's doing it now. The goals are kind of being spread around a little bit, but can they continue to do that? And they have.
Yeah.
They have.
Incredible.
And your number 9 is starting to get some important goals.
Yeah.
Right, on Havertz. I just do want to go back to that. First half, elbow, yellow card, no problem. It's a yellow card. The dive. So we kind of after studio yesterday, we kind of looked at it, and I looked at it really closely on some software that I can watch the games again. He's kind of lucky, by the way.
He is,
He's kind of lucky. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll put it like this. I absolutely understand why the referee didn't call it.
Mm.
I have no problem the referee not calling that as a dive, because in the quick the quickness of the nature of that happening, right? We saw it, and you're like, oh, he's gone down. There's a challenge coming in. He's gone down. Yeah, I think there might have been a bit of contact afterwards. Not a yellow for diving. Fine with that.
Yeah.
Right? Fine with it. Absolutely fine with it. But, of course, now we've got a zillion cameras. We have a different angles, different looks. And when you spend time, the referee can't do that because VAR can't check this for a yellow card. He kind of went to ground. Mm. He kind of went to ground from a couple of different angles. So that's kind of, I hope that's not sitting on the fence because I have no problem with the decision on the field. But, you know, looking back at it several angles, he kind of dived and went to ground way too easy. Is that too simplistic?
No. The big thing for me is that this is where I don't want to see games re-refereed.
Right.
By
exactly
VAR.
Right. Exactly right.
However,
I re-refereed it with the multitude of camera angles.
Yeah. But however, I think if you're trying to kid the referee, I think there's got to be an element of if there is a dive, I think you've got to do that for simulation. Because we're talking about grassroots football constantly and the example. And we do not like diving in football.
No.
It's so frustrating.
Yeah.
Because it's cheating.
In this country particularly.
Yeah. But it's cheating.
Yeah.
And I don't like that element of it.
Yeah.
So I think you've got to yellow card off the back of VAR. I think
you'd want it off the back of VAR. Yeah, I don't mind that.
I think for certain incidents, but simulation, which is what it is, I think you've got to yellow card.
Mm.
I think that's the big issue. Mm. Where they say, well, we can't give yellow cards for certain things. I understand the fouls, but for simulation, stamp it out the game.
You make an exception for VAR to get involved with that sort
with
of
simulation.
Thing. I mean, it's an incredibly important call.
Yeah.
of course, he could have been out of the game, 10 men, he stays on and scores a winner.
Where are we now? Brentford are 15th on 26 points. They could have been on 27 points, and that would have just given them a little bit of a safety blanket away from the bottom. Now they're in trouble.
Yeah.
And they're looking over their shoulders thinking, whoa, this isn't too comfortable.
Yeah.
So they're 5 points above Luton. Go 6 points. Luton have got to, they can lose two games and still be okay-ish. Yeah.
I mean, the other argument is, like, well, hang on, yeah, it was a little mistake. Other mistakes are made in different games that lead to goals. That's why, before VAR came in, my thing was like, oh, I don't know, like, cause some things are going to get corrected by VAR and some things aren't.
Yeah.
So some goals are going to be a little unfair. And we've seen examples of that through different reasons, through second yellows or other mistakes that are made that lead to a goal. So, well, that went out of play or that shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
But anyway, I guess, it does cut out a lot of errors from the game, from refereeing. But I just think, that a little break maybe for Arsenal.
Yeah.
I guess if 10 referees refereed that, I reckon 3 or 4 might have given a yellow card.
But Liverpool got a break the week before, didn't they?
Yeah. And then they didn't earlier in the season with a Diaz goal.
Yeah.
So, no, I mean, another big takeaway for us this game, Stephen, was the fighting spirit. Now, we say that a lot, don't we? Mm. Well, I think we say it a lot, right? Us, and pundits in general, it's a bit of a cliche. They worked hard, they've got fighting spirit about them. We literally saw that. Not literally in fighting, but some of the reactions of Gabriel and William Saliba in that game late on, where they have to defend, where Brentford played an incredible game, really, for them.
Yeah.
They really stepped up in this match. And there's been history between these two.
Yep.
It's not been easy to win games. Is that, with Declan Rice chucked in there as well, the physicality, we talked about Kai Havertz's physicality, is that the little bit of extra something that Arsenal might have this year that might pull them over the line?
Well, if you think back to when Brentford first came in the Premier League, on the Friday night when they played at the G-Tech, they bullied Arsenal.
Yeah, I remember that. Absolutely right.
They threw long balls in and they were physically weak and they got overpowered.
Yeah.
They're one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful team in the league now because of that spine. Where you talk about there, Gabriel and Saliba.
Yeah.
Declan Rice.
Yeah.
Then you go Havertz. Odegaard's not slight. He's a solid lad.
Yeah.
So you look at that and you go, the smaller players are in the wider areas. You've got Martinelli and Saka. But on a whole, Ben White's a big lad.
He's a centre-back. Yeah.
Even Kivior.
Kivior's a centre-back as well.
So when you look at that, you go, that's solid. Yeah. And they're up for a scrap in the game. If they want to get dirty, the opposition, not a problem.
Mm.
We can put it about as well. We can match up to that. It's not as physical and dirty as it used to be, football.
Mm.
But there is an element
you
where...
You need it.
Yeah.
City have it.
Exactly.
City have it, the central defenders from Rodri and others that can totally do that as well.
So there's an element where they've got more physically stronger, and that will always help them. But the big thing for me is they're so athletic. You watch the players, and they glide across the pitch. 90 minutes. The one thing I'd say about Declan Rice is... is, if you think back to his West Ham days, and he'd be a holding midfielder, but he almost knew he had to be a holding midfielder and an attacking midfielder and the leader. Mm. And he was doing so many jobs in the game. And you'd see him at times, 70 minutes, and he'd be hunched over, hands on his knees, trying to get his breath back in.
Yeah.
I watch him now, and because he knows he's got other players around him to do certain jobs, I'm watching him in the 98th minute, and he's cruising. And you think, what an asset that is for Arsenal late on in games.
Are you surprised that the number eight part of his game now looks to be blimmin' perfect for him and a bit of a masterstroke from manager? Jorginho has set him free, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know if I saw that coming.
But I think they've helped each other, haven't they?
Sorry?
I think they've helped each other. I think even Rice has helped Jorginho because at times, off the ball,
he'll come back and play alongside him in defensive situations.
Yeah.
The last topic we've got to touch before moving on, Stephen, is the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Aaron Ramsdale.
Oh,
of course, David Raya can't play against his parent club, the loan rules or whatever. So it was Aaron Ramsdale again, back in the middle of November, I think it's 25th of November, where the reverse fixture, same again. Ramsdale played, Hivett scored the winning goal, but the goalkeeper looked very shaky. Mm. Talk to me about that goal that Wissa scored, closing down Aaron Ramsdale. Was it amazing from the striker? Was it because Ramsdale's rusty from not playing? How much of it is his fault, Ramsdale, at that moment? All of it?
Well, it has to be, doesn't it? Because if that's a defender on the pitch and he takes a heavy touch and he gets closed down, we're saying that he's too slow on the ball.
Mm.
Well, he is too slow on the ball, isn't he? And that happens with goalkeepers. I think he is a little bit rusty as well. I think there's an overthought of, do I have to play out from the back and people are judging me? I'm not playing because of my kicking ability, and do I want to try and showcase that today? I think the big thing for me will just play your own game. You're not going to play anyway. I think that's being showed now by Arteta, which is such a shame for the lad.
Right, because particularly when it was sold that they're going to rotate, they're going to play. We haven't seen that at all.
No.
I feel bad for Ramsdale like that.
Yeah. But credit to Wissa. I mean, how quickly... Does he cover that ground?
Listen, the last thing on this, and I've said this a few times about goalkeepers, they're not very fast.
No.
Goalies, they're very, very good, and there's some goalkeepers that I've done pre-season that have great stamina.
Yeah.
But you forget, and the viewer forgets how quick footballers are, Stephen.
Mm, yeah.
How quick, and particularly Premier League players, and particularly Premier League strikers. If remember when we used to play? If your touch isn't at that level, and your touch anywhere on the field isn't quite right, boom.
On you.
They're right in you, whether it's a tackle, whether it's taking the ball off your toe. And sometimes you get an example of a goalkeeper. Look, he had the ball. It wasn't an awful touch.
No.
He moved his feet pretty quickly. He tries to put his foot back and play the ball. And all of a sudden, he's flying in, slides in to make the challenge. It's just an example of how quick
phenomenal
players are, and goalies are a little slower.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's all it is, isn't it? But what I would say is, what a performance after that mistake.
Yeah, you're right.
Incredible performance.
No, it was great. Made some brilliant saves.
And I hope people understand how difficult that is to do that.
God.
To go in at half-time, knowing that you've made an error, that the focus of the world is on you, who are watching that game, and we're all going, that's why he doesn't play. But that performance in the second half ultimately kept his team in it.
Yeah.
I mean, Ivan Toney's shot.
Amazing shot, by
unbelievable.
Way.
But the save, and then the save from Collins from the header, is a great save to tip it over the bar. He had an outstanding second half.
Fair play to him.
And I'm made up for him as well, because I've been in a situation before, and I'm sure you have yourself, where you feel so low and your confidence is that low, and you're thinking, no matter what I do, I know I'm not going to play or I'm not going to get in. And you feel sorry for yourself, whether it's
get a chance to play and impress everybody and you make a mistake like that.
I felt so sorry for him.
That's a good point you make there. And important that we say the character of the man was pretty
brilliant
and impressive there afterwards. Yeah. So well done him. Well done Arsenal. Well done Havertz. And it's brilliant, isn't it? And this title race, as we move on to other teams here, I mean, it's the best we've seen it, certainly as we've been covering the league here at NBC.
Yeah.
And it's tough to think of a title race for as long as we've been playing and watching the Premier League.
I think the most exciting title race was the Leicester one, because it was different.
Yeah.
It was a different type of story.
Yeah.
But these three teams are phenomenal, and they deserve to be exactly where they are. I mean, at the beginning of the season, I don't think anyone would have put Liverpool as close as this.
No.
I think we all thought, well, we'll see how they adjust.
Maybe building midfield and stuff. Yeah.
But, I mean, credit to all three. It's been brilliant so far.
They're technically great. and they've got incredible fighting spirit.
Yeah.
And that's definitely in their managers.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it right now. And the Jurgen Klopp thing leaving it's just we're a real sweet spot in the Premier League right now. Yeah. And our viewing figures are showing that as well, which is great.
I think the only sad thing to come out of today's game was what a loss Klopp is going to be to the Premier League.
Yeah.
And that respect between the managers at the end of the game, the embrace, they knew they'd been in one of the best games.
Yeah.
And there was huge respect there for the style and how they hurt each other. But it's almost like they stood there as two boxers, just trading blows against each other. And then after it, they just, well played.
And John Champion's line, you know, is this the last embrace?
Mm.
You know, it's kind of cool, isn't it? And I think there was one interview with Jurgen, Pep, sort of saying that in 10 years' time, you're going to sit down with Jurgen Klopp over a beer and talk about that. I mean, I'm sure that, and he said, yeah, of course we will at some point. Can you imagine that conversation with a few beers? It's been incredible how they've driven each other.
Frightening.
To really high levels.
Yeah.
So that's great, 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 great. Okay, so let's move down the table a smidgen for the Champions League qualifying spaces here. And what have we got? We've got Aston Villa.
Move on if you want.
Sorry?
Can move on if you want.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Aston Villa, former team of Stephen Warnock here. Aston Villa 0, Tottenham 4. Now, I think first off, I think people, the story of these two clubs this season with these two managers that are newish into their teams has been remarkable.
Yep.
The impact they've had, their philosophies, that's so obvious the way that they play. But Tottenham, we disagreed before this one where I think you thought that their best, Villa are better.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you know what? I think that they're very best. I think Spurs are better. Villa got more injuries right now, I think, just though Spurs have got some. Spurs' bench looked a lot stronger today.
Yeah.
But just the game. Back to the game. Villa did have a game in the week, didn't they, in the
Conference League.
Yeah. They looked a little flat. They changed the system.
Mm.
Go from there.
Didn't like it.
Mm.
If I'm in the changing room, I'm thinking, why? Why are we changing it now?
Negative, defensive kind of
posture. And I know they've done it in the season. At other times, they've gone with a three, but they've always gone... The best results have come with the four at the back. It's so difficult to play against system.
Yeah.
And you're the home team. I almost get it more away from home because you're expecting the home team to come onto you and what have you. It just felt very much like Villa accepted that Spurs were going to have more of the ball and they were okay with that. And I'm thinking... Well, that's not Aston Villa this season.
It's not Aston Villa. I totally agree. But they did get chances on the counter-attack.
They did.
They did get looks. So it's like you're going to do your thing, and today at Villa Park, we're going to sit back and we're going to try and play on the counter because you're high line. Ollie Watkins looked a little off. Now he had the challenge from Van der Ven.
I think that knocked him.
I think it was the beginning of his is not a very good game for them.
Yeah.
I mean, looking back, I think we said it at half time. This only goes to the result in terms of Unai Emery's decision to play a little differently with a different system. And they looked tired and they looked a little flat.
Mm.
Is that the manager's fault to demand so much from a team? Has there been enough rotation? Is it the injuries now that are finally kind of derailing the team? Or are they overachieving to be in the top four anyway? I mean, they're still there right now. Fair play to them. But is it going to be? Are they going to fall away given the squad and the amount of injuries they've still got?
Quite possibly. I mean, at the beginning of the season, you would have said sixth round about there.
Would be great.
And then try and have a great run in the Europa Conference League. However, the sum of the football they've played has been phenomenal, but they don't have the depth. And that's the big issue, is that when you think, beginning of the season, to lose Tyrone Mings, Buendia, and then lose Kamara a few weeks ago. And he's vitally important.
He's really good, yeah. That pushes McGinn into one of those in-between space.
But that protection, him and Douglas Luiz. I talked before about Konate making Van Dijk a better player and vice versa. They do that together. That relationship that they have and the way they dovetail each other is exceptional.
Mm.
But when you drop McGinn back into that, McGinn then has to put the brakes on how he takes the opposition for it back towards their own goal and the positions he gets in. So it has a massive knock-on effect. I'll say I'm worried about Villa, but they've done this before where they've had a little bit of a blip.
They have, and they go again.
Yeah, against United they had a blip where they should have won the game at Villa Park.
Mm.
And then you're thinking, is that the end of it? And then they dominate games again. Mm-hmm. They do look tired, though. They really do look tired.
What went through the head of John McGinn?
Oh.
He tried to kick Udogi into row Z in the stand. Like,
oh, no, he didn't try
that.
To. He did.
I mean, any kind of reasoning for that? I mean, I've got nothing. I've got nothing for you. Like, he's such a usually composed player, controls himself. He absolutely launched him, didn't he, for that red card?
I like to be physical in a good way when I played. Mm. I don't like that. That's disrespectful.
Yeah, really bad.
I mean, if someone did that to you, playing on the local field, you're nearly fighting.
Yeah.
It's that bad. And you saw the reaction of the Spurs bench and the Spurs players, and rightly so. I think it was just pure frustration about the way the game had gone. And I think just before that incident, they had a chance, Villa, and it was 2-0 at the time, and they could have got back into the game, and it was a missed opportunity. And it was almost like he was so angry at that incident.
Mm. Maybe.
But there's no defending that.
Are Spurs better than Villa?
I think it's been proved today. I got that one wrong.
But just to the end of the, just like going
till the end of the season,
after 38 games. Ooh,
I think it'll be very close. Mm. If I'm being honest,
they've still got a little gap in there.
Got a couple points. Yeah, but it's a game in hand for Tottenham, which is a big game. Yeah, I think very much like the top of the league and even the bottom of the league, a lot of points are going to get dropped in between now and the end of the season. Again. Mm. What a great thing this is, where we've got United, Tottenham and Villa vying for that top four spaces. Brilliant. Yeah. I love it.
What do you like about Spurs?
I love the fullbacks, the way they play. Love Udogi.
So different, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that is...
We've never seen that, by the way.
No.
We've never seen a fullback coming inside and then going like way high as well.
Yeah. I mean, both fullbacks I've seen at times and I'm thinking, they're playing in the number 10 or the striker. It's phenomenal. But it creates so much confusion with the opposition. They're thinking, do we go back? What do we do?
Well, if it's me, for example, who played in midfield as a defensive, I'm like, well, have I got to get him then?
Yeah, exactly.
Who's got my guy?
Yeah.
Who's going to take... So it creates an overload. You're caught out. I'm going to start moaning my forward. I want my forward to come back and mark who's ever in midfield.
Yeah.
Then you've got Pap Sarr going from the centre to the outside right. Porro comes in there. And James Maddison floats wherever he wants to float. They are the most fluid team in the Premier League now.
And they understand it as well,
don't they? They really do.
How to hurt opposition teams. And I think that's incredible. But I mentioned something to you, didn't I, when we were off air and we were chatting about them. And I said, Udogi's had the most dribbles in midfield this season.
And that's not just a fullback.
No.
That's any player.
It's incredible. Absolutely incredible. But he's got so much power running with the ball. He's arguably one of the best dribblers of a ball because of the way he glides past players and pushes it. And he's got that strong right arm just to brush people off. And I love him. Absolutely love him.
You add into that, going to their recruitment, Mickey van der Ven, Christian Romero, World Cup winner, and Pedro Porro that was there before but didn't really play much in the previous manager.
Nope.
And you got a Guillermo Vicaro, the 27-year-old Italian goalkeeper. I mean, that's building. That's good recruitment right there.
Solid.
I mean, the two centre-backs, I don't know if there's many better than that in the Premier League.
It's incredible, isn't it, that we're not talking about Daniel Levy anymore? Last 3 years, we've been talking about, the fan base have, get him out, needs to leave the club, decisions are wrong. You get the right man at the helm.
You get the right man,
and you
director of football or the coach or both of them.
Exactly.
And then
make big decisions and see a philosophy of how you want to play. Make things good on the pitch and the fans will back everything you do.
Mm.
And very similar with Arteta. He was under so much pressure at one point. But him and Edu have
the two key positions.
Kroenke's now all silence. No talk about the Arsenal need a new ownership and things. I think it was the guy from Spotify who was tipped to come in and buy the club. And there was so much talk about that.
Yeah.
Exactly the same.
Brilliant, mate. I enjoy it. I mean, Super Sunday today, these games, and Tottenham, wow, that's a statement. 4-0 victory is quite the statement. And I continue to love the way that the manager speaks. I watch his press conference every week. Again, the one before this weekend, he was asked about what it means to finish in the top four.
Yeah.
And he basically saying, yeah, but that at what? So at what cost? I'm not going to jump through hoops for that. We're building.
Mm.
He said, I'm going to be honest with you. I want to build to win.
Yeah.
I don't want to just qualify for a competition. If it means qualifying and we don't continue to build, I'm not interested in that because we've seen that before. Teams are in and then they're out.
Yep.
He really is setting his sights really high and just loving what they're doing at the moment.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
150 years, the Kentucky Derby's been an icon of racing and luxury. I'm gonna shine my way. The first Saturday in May, the world turns its attention here.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. And they're into the stretch. Oh, my goodness.
This is the place to be.
The 150th Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 4th, on NBC and Peacock.
All right, Manchester United 2, Everton 0. Crikey, can I even remember what happened here? Two penalties was, wasn't it? Bruno scores the first penalty, Rashford the second one. I thought, and I said before the game, that I thought United in this game against Everton would kind of have the ball and dominate and try and produce, and it would be a game to see the midfield and the attackers doing their thing. They played counter-attack again, and it was good. Yeah. It worked really well. It kind of worked out what they wanted. Bruno dropped deep, and Garnacho and Rashford stayed high and got in behind a few times. It was a really good victory for a counter-attacking performance and a style and a strategy. Is that it, then? Is that case closed, or is there more to talk about why United are doing that, or does it not matter at this point?
Oh, no, it matters, because you can't do that against better teams. I mean, you look at Bournemouth, Fulham, both won at Old Trafford this season. Fulham won convincingly. Fulham had a lot of chances in the game. Luton went there. Okay, they lost the game, but they caused
and they're
so
tons
many
of the ball and
yeah,
pushed
exactly.
United back.
But for United, I think it was 30 shots on goal Everton had. Not a lot on target, however, but a lot of shots on goal. It's too many. For a home team of a club like Manchester United, that is far too many opportunities to be given up. The money they've spent, why are you still playing as a counter-attacking team? The big thing for me is that it's not his way of playing at Ajax. And he said, I don't have the players to play this system. I think, well, why don't you go out and buy the players?
He's bought quite a lot of players now.
Yeah, exactly. So, something's not quite right at the club in terms of whether it's a trust in the manager or the manager's trust in the players and the way that they play. But you can get at Manchester United. We said it before the game, you thought they'd dominate the ball, and I just said, if I was Sean Dyche, I'd get after them and try and cause them problems. And he did it for the first 5 or 10 minutes, and you actually said, didn't you, when we were watching it, this will be typical United. 10 minutes in, they'll suddenly get a foothold in it, something will happen, and then they'll start to counter-attack.
But I thought they possess more. I thought they controlled the game. But they didn't.
You're playing counter-attacking team against a team who's 16th.
Yeah, oh, they did it against Luton.
Yeah, incredible.
Just quickly on the United stuff that's happening right now. I think we all agree that the change of ownership, or the part ownership change with Sir Jim Ratcliffe, is a good thing. And I think the early moves and signs and sounds are pretty good. Of course, the big talking point is the manager, Erik ten Hag. Are you of the thought that let him continue, particularly if we finish fifth and there's five spots for the Champions League? It's going to be, you know, I'm kind of putting some, other stuff around this. It might be a difficult transition. It might be difficult next season or two as they sift through what they've got, try and get rid of some, try and bring others. He might be the guy to continue instead of making a change, Stephen, and having somebody else come in. It's like, wow, this is difficult. It isn't going well. We don't win the games because we haven't got the players, and we've sold him, we've got rid of him. Where are you with Ten Hag in the future?
I think it's going to be extremely difficult because I don't think he's the right man. I thought he was at the time, but I've been pretty disappointed, if I'm being honest. I thought Liverpool weren't great. I think they capitalised on that and got into the top three, qualified for the Champions League. But this season, they've really struggled. And I look at Ten Hag and think, you've got to do more. There's got to be more from you. There's too many injuries at the club, whether that's behind the scenes or poor signings, so many, you haven't done the homework on the players. But the other side of things is if you go and get a new manager, now you're dealing with predominantly the same players, unless you can shift a few in and out. But they're under financial constraints as well, because they spent heavily since Ten Hag's come in. So there's big problems there. And the new manager comes in and goes, like you just said, I don't want half of these players, they're not good enough.
Yeah.
But there's a culture problem at Manchester United as well. The players, a lot of the players have been there for the last five, 6 years, and the culture's been bad, and the results have been poor. And I think a new manager needs to come in and shift that. Now,
it's going to take time, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, but I only look at Spurs and I look at their culture and where they were at. But get the right man in.
It's an amazing difference, isn't it?
I mean, the positivity he's bought in.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you saw the interview with Gary Lineker, where he sat down with Postecoglou and he said, sort of talked about his relationship with players. I think we all think Postecoglou would be bouncing around the training ground, hey, mate, how are you? And what have you? And he'd been with everyone. He's like, no, I've got to keep a distance. And you think, wow, what man management that is, to be able to be liked by the players, but keep your distance, be able to put a system on a team that is really impressive, but almost everyone knows you're the boss and you've got that authority.
Difficult.
But that's what's needed at United, whereas I feel like there's almost an arrogance with Ten Hag in the way he comes across. I don't think it is that way. I don't think he is arrogant, but it seems that way when he talks.
Mm. It's going to be fascinating. Just a quick line on Everton. Again, we think they're good enough. We think that, you know, of course, I'm sure the fans are worried about another points deduction.
Mm.
There's a little bit of cushion there between the bottom three right now. They're going to be okay, aren't they, Everton?
There's not enough goals in the team. That's the concern.
But their expected...
yeah, I know.
Their expected goals, apparently should have scored 13 more than they've got right now. Now, yeah, whether you like the XG thing or not. The basic saying is that they've created quite a lot and they should have scored 13 more.
It's incredible, isn't it? That is an incredible stat.
Mm.
However, how do you suddenly improve what you've got if they've been from the start of the season till we're in March now and they're still not clicking into gear in forward
there's
areas?
Ways of doing it.
Yeah, there is.
In my opinion, there's ways of doing it, and Sean Dyche doesn't really go away from... I want my back four.
Yeah.
I want my midfield four. And I got my little guy totally there. And great. I got my striker. Now, just look at the team. He could totally play. James Garner holding. Amadou is on the right side as a number eight. Doucouré is a number eight. Have both those flying forward.
Yeah.
You could tell your wide players in O'Neill and Harrison to play a little higher. You could switch your full-backs out and change Ben Grodby and have more of an attack-minded full-back. Mikulenko, ask him to play a little higher. There is ways of turning up the attacking dial.
Oh, 100%.
But, of course, there's risk that you can see goals doing that.
Yeah.
And Sean Dyche prefers not to take that risk with the thought that the goals will come.
Yeah.
And it's just whether it's better, whether it's Calvert-Lewin or McNeil or anybody else, they've got to start scoring the goals, haven't they, to get away from there.
It was fascinating listening to Gary O'Neill talk about Wolves and the lack of goals and where do the goals come from. And he said, we've got to get more players in the box.
Right.
But organised.
Just things like that. Simple things like that.
But organised off the back of it. When it breaks down, how to then win the ball back quickly to make sure that those players in forward areas are then utilised and used in good areas.
Yeah.
That's good management. That's a brave manager as well. Mm. But however, Sean Dyche's record staying in the Premier League and being organised in the way
He's done well in a very difficult circumstances the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, it's just that, was it 11 games now without a win? That's a concern.
Yeah.
That's a real concern.
Really is, Okay, so just whipping around after the other games, I'll just go down the list here, Stephen, and just have a comment about which ones, I guess, at the end of this. Crystal Palace 1, Luton Town 1, Wolves 2, Fulham 1, Brighton 1, Nottingham Forest 0, West Ham 2, Burnley 2, and Bournemouth 2, Sheffield United 2. Plenty of goals there. I think there's three stories here that we should just talk at real quick. And let's start at the top here, Stephen, with Crystal Palace 1, Luton Town 1. Luton Town, my friend, 21 points, 3 points behind Nottingham Forest, with a game in hand, with Nottingham Forest likely to get a points deduction in the next couple of weeks. Luton are fighting for all they're worth. They've still got a decent chance of staying in the league, haven't they?
Yeah, were you like me at the beginning of the season? Didn't give them a chance.
No, I did not.
I think it's a lesson for us all, isn't it? To realise how teams can improve, how they can adapt to the league and understand it.
Yep.
Credit to Rob Edwards. What a phenomenal
what a job
he's doing.
What a job, exactly.
I mean, when you talk about recruitment at Spurs, look at their recruitment. I mean, Lokonga and Barkley in midfield.
Yeah.
I think is arguably one of the best midfield outside the top six.
Yeah, it is.
I think it's unbelievable, the balance that they've got between them. I think Luton have missed Lokonga of late. But then you look at Carl Morris. I mean, what an introduction to the Premier League.
Yeah. He doesn't really look like a Premier League forward.
No.
But he's done it. He's got good numbers and he's looked good. And
But the belief to stay in games is quite brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, and the fight that they've got, and they get the late equalising from Woodrow with the header, the glancing header there. They're absolutely in it. And Palace have, you know, they've got a different manager now and looked mostly in control, but let that one go late.
Yeah.
But a great point for Luton Town. Another story, just maybe quickly, again, I think we've mentioned him a little bit, Gary O'Neill at Wolves. Wolves 2, Fulham 1. Two teams and two managers done well. Like, they're sitting, they're not in any drama. We're not talking about him for relegation.
No.
Just another nod to Gary O'Neill, really. I mean, with thinking about managers of the season, he's got to be in the conversation, given
absolutely
the squad, the injuries, you know, taking over late. It's pretty remarkable what he's doing. I mean, talk about a bright, young English manager. He's got a big future, hasn't he?
He has, yeah. And don't forget, he's only going to improve. And
he's learning all the time.
He's learning on the job in the Premier League, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
Going up against top managers. Massively impressed with Gary O'Neill.
The Brighton 1, Nottingham Forest 0. Again, it just makes you look at the league table. Nottingham Forest, 4 points, just 3 points ahead of Luton, which talked about Luton Town. With Forest possibly, probably, having a points deduction, how worried would you be if you're a Nottingham Forest fan?
I would be worried. However, having watched them against Liverpool last week, I was at the game, and they cause a threat.
I think they do too.
And they've got goals in the team, but you've got to be clinical in taking them chances. Alanga goes on one-on-one with Kelleher last week, should score. Whether he'd been offside, I'm not so sure, but ask questions after. Mm. But you should finish that opportunity. Awonye needs to be fully fit. I think he's a danger, but with Gibbs White and Hudson-Odoi, Origi, I think they've got great options there. So because of the firepower, I give them more of a chance. However, with what's lingering over them, is that in the back of the minds there's panic?
Yeah, I mean, we had points deduction. There wasn't many teams that did, and we did. And we had 3 points deducted, and we were at appeal.
Yeah.
And we really, really expected to get those points back. Mm. And we got the no on that pretty late, and we went down by 2 points.
Wow.
So I've said it a few times, I think, on with this podcast here. It's so, I to this day, it makes me so angry that we didn't show up for a game.
Yep.
Thought we could get away with it. 3 points deducted, didn't get them back, went down by 2 points.
Wow.
Awful, awful. So anytime that's lingering, it is a concern for those players. We'll find out in the next couple of weeks, I think, isn't it going to be the middle of
April,
this month?
Yeah.
Is it?
End of the month, is it?
Is it? Or into April?
Yeah.
That's really late, by the way, to try and figure
it is.
Out. Other than that, West Ham got 2 goals back to get a point against Burnley. Funny West Ham, aren't they? They're just funny. Like, sometimes they look great.
Inconsistent.
Yeah, inconsistent.
It must drive David Moyes mad.
Yeah.
Because they've got so much talent.
I know they
have within
now,
the squad.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people say, oh, we don't, from West Ham's point of view, fan base, oh, we want Moyes out. I'm not so sure. I think you've got to give him a little bit more time.
I do too.
He's been so successful.
I think he needs to sign his little contract. Sign his contract and carry on, and it will come to a natural end when it is.
Yeah, 100% agree.
But when you're 2-0 down against, you know, Burnley
it's not a great sign, is it?
And the fans again switch on to that. Blimey, is it really the right guy?
Mm.
So that's probably about it. Bournemouth 2, Sheffield United 2. Sheffield United, you know, still fighting. Fair play to them. But it looks pretty forlorn for both them and Burnley at the bottom of the league table.
Yeah.
And that rounds up our Two Robbies podcast. So thank you so much, mate, for coming
in.
Fascinating conversation. Great short talk, great chat. Great opinions, and it's been real, real fun. Next episode of this podcast is Sunday, the 17th of March, to recap an abbreviated match week 29, where only 4 matches are taking place due to FA Cup quarter-finals fixtures. And remember Monday's game, Chelsea versus Newcastle. Coverage begins at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on USA Network. So thanks for watching and listening. Until next time, we'll see you soon. Cheers.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.